With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. Your hosts are Michael McNamara and me, Ryan Schwan. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. Pelicans just lost in the Summer League. Michael, I'm so depressed. How do you feel?
Mr. Chance to get San Antonio yet again. thought that would have been exciting. I mean, we got to admit, the Summer League was a little bit more fun.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, than we expected, and that's all you could ask for. Winning it wouldn't have mattered. Win would have been nice to see one more game of some of these guys, but I think it's pretty safe to say we could reach some conclusions on some of the guys we've seen, and maybe more importantly, you know, a little bit about the systems we'll run.
Yeah, I got to honestly say, I'm 100% convinced the reason why I actually enjoyed, and this is probably the first time ever, I actually enjoyed watching a New Orleans Summer League team ever, and primarily it's because I'm not watching players trying out for roles they have no business being in. So I'm not seeing Jeff Withey and Darius Miller cast as primary scorers for a team, or Austin Rivers trying to learn how to dribble and pass at the same time. So I was actually watching Larry Drew, who has spent years as a point guard, playing point guard, and Seth Curry, who spent years as a shooting guard, playing shooting guard, and Cam Birch, who's obviously a guy who can rebound and block shots, rebounding and blocking shots. They're not doing anything out of what you expect. And it was a well-built team as far as Summer League talent goes.
Yeah, I mean, people didn't see any high draft picks on the roster. So I think a lot of people automatically assumed that it was a talentless team. But really, you know, a guy like Karl Anthony Towns is, what, 19 years old? And yeah, he's going to be great. But wouldn't you say that a 25-year-old guy who's been in the D-League for the last 4 or 5 years is probably a better player today than Karl Anthony Towns? Or at least it's the difference is negligible.
Probably. I would go close to saying that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, so, I mean, Karl Anthony Towns is, you know, I think what he averaged like 13-8, and that's not too different from what we're seeing a lot of
like,
guys.
So. Like Josh Harrelson and Karl Anthony Towns will have a similar impact in a summer league game right now in their careers, even though one. You know, you just look at the rosters and you go, oh, Minnesota, they should have a great team. They have Zach LaVine and Karl Anthony Towns. And, like, you would think that those are the teams that are good. But really, the Pelicans had a roster of, like, D-League All-Stars or very good D-League players. And in all honesty, that should be, you know, a bunch of 19-year-old kids no matter where they're drafted.
Yeah, I felt that Dell was a real dick to the D-League select team. Because I feel like he just came in, looked at the D-League and said, I'm going to take your stars and put them on my team. And you guys can just take your second team all D-League if there is such a thing. And the Pelicans will have your good guys.
Yeah. So, well, let's talk about the players first, because honestly, I cared and I care more about the coaching, even though you get attached to the players because you see them specifically. I guess, you know, the two that everybody at least started talking about and mostly talk about are Seth Curry and Larry Drew. And I think them playing well in summer league combined with Norris Cole not signing his qualifying offer yet or not being under contract, you know, combined with recency bias and people always getting excited about summer league led to this. I know I got the question at least 20 to 30 times this past week of why not just let Cole go and sign Seth Curry and Larry Drew. I guess, first of all, do you think both of those guys are surefire NBA rotation players, not just end of the bench guys, but guys who could actually be in a rotation? And secondly, if so, or either way, do you think that there would be any difference if the Pelicans did take a route like that, just let Cole go and signed two young, cheap guys?
I think that both of them could have the opportunity to be a fourth guard on many different teams in the league, but they would never, ever elevate themselves to the role of elite fourth guard, like Jason Smith did for us as a big man for many years. So they can never aspire to be quite that good. But Cole is obviously a fourth guard on a team. What I want to say, though, is when you get to that level of player, you almost never have like a guy who's actually winning you games. And, you know, you can always come up with an anecdote where, hey, he had a fourth quarter once where he scored 10 points, and that's why we won the game. And then, of course, you know, you can ignore the fact that there was also fourth quarters where he shot like 0-4 and was yanked as soon as he possibly could be because he wasn't doing anything. And that was just as impactful as the fact he shot those and scored in those fourth quarters. Cole isn't going to win you games. And what you're just looking for at that point is a guy who's average enough that they're not going to hurt you badly. And I think you could say that safely about both Larry Drew and Seth Curry, that they're going to be good enough that they're not going to hurt you badly. Whether they're ever going to be a positive contributor, I would never make that claim about any of those three players, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm comfortable enough with either of those guys to say that yet. And I know it's cliche with Norris Cole having NBA Finals experience and yada, 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 but he's a guy that if we were going into a playoff game tomorrow, I wouldn't worry at all about 10 to 18 minutes where I haven't seen anything on the NBA level from Drew or Curry yet to feel that way about. So I mean, I don't know. And the other thing about Drew and Seth Curry, I guess specifically against each other, let's say the Pelicans just back away. Let's say they say, thanks for coming out to Summer League, everybody. Wish you all the best. They back away from their entire roster. On their entire roster in Summer League, of the 29 other teams, how many of those guys from the Summer League roster get offered a contract with guaranteed money sometime in the next week? NBA team.
Someone on the Pelicans roster getting a guaranteed offer from an NBA team?
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet that Seth Curry would.
Okay.
But that's it.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
And the reason why Seth Curry would is because he actually has a name recognition. Everybody knows Steph Curry, and they're not going to be surprised to see Seth Curry. And he led any team out there can say, hey, he led the Summer League in scoring, so he must be pretty awesome. And it'll just be like a little buzz. There's going to be, like, there's always going to be someone like Vivek Ranadive in Sacramento who's just like, dude, get that guy. He's awesome. And put down some guaranteed money for a couple of years.
So in the span of about 30 seconds, your first sarcastic voice sounded very Sylvester Stallone to me. And then you immediately hit a Keanu Reeves note when speaking as Vivek Ranadive, which, that's probably the furthest from what I imagine his voice sounds like. So I've got to say, very impressive on what might be our last podcast of the summer.
I just want some dap for actually saying his name right, because I'm pretty sure I did.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is going to go in the annals of history. This is going to be the one that people bookmark and point to. But, yeah, I mean, and that's kind of my thing with the Summer League roster is, again, I fully expected the tweets and seeing on the message boards people getting excited about this guy after a good game and that. I mean, Victor Rudd was a guy that we had to sign after a couple of games, and Kem Birch was, you know, told to me he's a poor man's Tyson Chandler, and you know, I expected to get all of these things, but at the end of the day, if you step back and think objectively, there's maybe one guy on this team who some other team in the league thinks is definitely an NBA player, and I agree. I think the only guy, you know, who you might have to compete for, who won't be there in a couple of months, let's say, if you have a roster opening, is Seth Curry. He's the only guy that I think on the market would be desired at all, so he's the only one that I would be even interested in giving any kind of a contract to.
Yeah, I will say that Seth Curry or Larry Drew, if either of them got camp invites, I'm thinking that's good. Like, that's not a bad thing. Both of those guys, I feel like, have a chance to be okay. And also, I wouldn't be upset if Kem Birch got one. We don't have Withy under contract. We haven't brought him back. Don't know what's going on with it. So, you know, Kem Birch comes across to me as more of like a Lance Thomas, Linton, like a bigger Lance Thomas or a Linton Johnson, if anybody remembers him.
Mm.
Linton Johnson had a more of a jump shot, but he was like an energy rebounder, played kind of in the, you know, 10-15 range from the basket, and you couldn't really expect him to go out further than that. Like, that's the kind of level. Like, you know, if we could get someone like that as your fifth big man playing behind those big contracts we have in the front court, like, what has Withy shown you that's better than what Kem Birch has shown you in these games? Like, I'd rather have Birch.
Yeah. I would rather have neither. I mean, to me,
there's
still a lot. Again, this is the last thing we've watched, so we create in our mind that it's Kem Birch versus Withy versus some other summer league scrub. There's some real NBA players still on the market. Like guys.
Yeah, and there's probably plenty of guys in Europe that Dell has watched for years that, you know, could be enticed over for a million or $2 million contract.
Right.
In a couple
like,
years.
I think I said on this podcast, Kem Birch was the guy I was most excited about watching going into summer league. Even with that bias, I will say unequivocally, there's no way Kem Birch is an NBA player. Like I saw him get pushed under the basket for rebounds by guys who will never play in this league. And yeah, he had a couple blocks, you know, he's athletic, but not athletic enough in the NBA. I mean, there was times where they would throw it to him on the break and, you know, a guy was in the restricted area and he couldn't go up over him. He has good straight line speed, but no lateral. Like, we get excited because it's the last thing we saw and these guys wore our jerseys, but he's not an NBA player. Edwin, I was excited to see, but he's not an NBA player. Like, it's, I don't know. I don't mean to crush hopes, and I know people got attached to these guys, but they're just going to be Pelicans trivia in the future. I think Seth Curry, I know I saw on Twitter it seemed like you were leaning a little more towards Larry Drew. To me, I try to imagine what would that fifth role be, or fifth guard role be, and not only if injuries occur, because honestly, if injuries occur, it's not going to matter if we have Larry Drew or Seth Curry. Like, you know, the S will have hit the fan at that point if we're really relying on that guy for major minutes. But trying to think about, you know, if actually in the rotation or, you know, one minor injury occurs, Cole goes down, let's say, what we would actually need from that fifth guard. And the reason that I would be slightly optimistic about Curry is actually what we didn't see in summer league. And that was a guy who I think is a very good catch and shoot 3-point shooter. I watched every single minute of every game, sadly enough. And I could only remember about two or three times where Seth Curry got a spot up, like set, kick out to him three. The opposing coaches, even if you watch in transition, like they kind of defended him the way they do his brother, where every time the Pelicans were in transition, somebody was out on him. You know, I mean, he was being guarded as a number one option. If he actually played for an NBA team, he would be the guy that is probably paid the least attention to on the court. And I saw, you know, in the D League last year in a large sample size, that he could drain the three at a high rate. And I just think everything we saw in summer league was bonus, that if guys do run out on him, he can put the ball on the deck and shoot it off the bank, or, you know, have some nice creative layups and floaters. So I don't even think we saw the Seth Curry NBA player that we would in summer league, because he was being guarded as a number one option. So when I think about what this team would need, Tyreek's going to have the ball, Drew's going to have the ball, Cole's going to have the ball, Gordon's going to have the ball. I would just want a kickout guy, not a traditional point guard, because I don't see how a traditional point guard would ever be of any use in this team with all the guys that we have.
So I actually was approaching it slightly different with Larry Drew, and I understand where you're going with that. And, you know, I actually went back and forth a lot, but the reason why I prefer Drew isn't because I'd expect him to suddenly be on the court with the ball in his hands making decisions. And really what I liked more about Larry Drew than Seth Curry as far as fit for this team is Drew seemed to be a better defender to me, from what at least I saw in these games. And there's not a lot of defense being played, but I felt like he was locked in. He was more able to switch and get out on guys than Curry was. And I saw him specifically knock down open three-pointers. So if I'm trying to replace like a Norris Cole kind of spot, I want the bigger guard who can defend better and knock down the three-pointer if he has to. And, you know, both of them... If you put them both in a pick-and-roll situation, I think Drew has a better chance of coming up with a nice pass for a score to the roll man. But I think Seth Curry is just as deadly coming off as a shooter. So as far as running a pick-and-roll, it doesn't matter. Either one of those guys is fine. I kind of like Drew better for other reasons.
Yeah, I say give me Seth so he could recruit his brother in 2017. So, yeah, no, I mean, with that said... I mean, we don't know. It's been very hush on Norris Cole. A couple of days ago, there was a report that Philly might be interested. Since then, they had signed two more guards, one of them Pierre Jackson, who we're all familiar with. Their roster's like already at the limit, if not over it, with guys who have guaranteed or partially guaranteed contracts. So I'm not too worried about them putting out a big bid. I mean, people seem a little confused that this whole process is dragging out this way, but I mean, restricted free agents don't really change teams in the first place, and they don't even garnish much interest unless they're really good players or players with considerable upside. And Norris Cole is neither of those. I mean, he's a guy that's probably worth what his qualifying offer is. So if you're another team, you're going to have to pay way more than that to get him, at which point it isn't worth it at all. So, I mean, I thought maybe this process would be done by now, but it's exactly the way I expected it to play out, for Cole to look around for offers to get none, for his agent to try to drum up some fake interest to try to get the Pelicans to do something, the Pelicans not to bite, and eventually it'll end the way that we always expected to, with him signing a qualifying offer. Do you see any possibility of it ending any other way?
The only other possibility is if the Pelicans right now have like an offer less than the one-year qualifying offer for more years on the table. So what I mean by that, like the qualifying offer for him, I think is like 2.7.
It's 3.06 or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so it wouldn't shock me if they had like a deal on the table of 2 years, $5 million. So, or you know, some, maybe even 2 years, $5 million with a team option in the second year or something like that. Because they've done that in the past where they're like, okay, you're a guy, you're familiar with our system, we like you, you're not a jackass. So, you know, they did this with Jason Smith. Like, he was a good value to the team. They put a nice, slightly longer-term offer on the table, and he took it because he wanted a little more security. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, and he came back and said, yeah, I'll take that five-year deal rather than signing for the qualifying and taking a little more this year and then playing the market. But, you know, when we look at how salaries are going, like, maybe he plays pretty well this year and he can easily land like a $5 million a year deal. It's possible with this market. I don't know. So it makes sense for me. If I was him, I would bet on myself and play a year on the qualifying offer and see what I can get in the market next year.
Yeah. I mean, I would, especially, I mean, looking at it through his eyes, he probably thinks he's a better player than Corey Joseph, right?
Right.
Whether he's right or not, you know, is debatable, but he just sees Corey Joseph get 4 for $30.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's probably asking his agent, why aren't I getting those offers? His agent probably isn't telling him the true reason why not. So he's probably frustrated, will sign the qualifying, hopefully play mad this whole year and earn that contract. I'd be down for that, but... Yeah, I see that playing out that way. There's been a couple of reports also that Seth is close to a deal with the Pelicans. That's the case that would give them, and then Cole signs 13 guys under contract. I mean, what would be the most, let's say you're Dell Demps right now and trying to negotiate a contract with Seth Curry. What kind of things would you be talking about? Would you be looking for a multi-year deal, or just want to give him partially guaranteed in the first year? What would be what you would offer to him and where you'd be willing to go?
I would go the same route that he did with other players he's been bringing over, like Babbitt and a couple other ones, where you give them a nice, more than veteran minimum level first year, and then have a team option in the second year. If they play well, you can keep them on at basically the same price, and otherwise let them walk. Like, there's no reason. So unless Dell actually thinks that Seth Curry will come in and be an impact player, there's no reason to give additional. It's the same argument I had with Dante Cunningham. I don't think he's an impact player. So why give him any more than, like, the veteran minimum? And, you know, when you're a young player like Seth Curry, you're just trying to get in the league. You can get the veteran minimum from anyone. Dante Cunningham, maybe not so much. But, you know, with Seth Curry, there's a chance of some upside. So give him a little more. Bring him in for that first year. See how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, there's no real skin in the game. Do you think that it would take more than that to land Seth Curry? Do you think he's in demand?
Well, I mean, Dell, it was interesting. Dell did talk a little bit when he was on the other night about Seth Curry. He said he was actually close to bringing him in last year, which I'm assuming he was one of the guys he was talking to in that whole Gail McHale. Who else were all those scrubs? Elliot Williams.
Yeah.
That whole era when he was bringing in all those guards. My guess is that he was only offering 10-day contracts, and Curry maybe wisely thought it would be smart to just play out his D-League year and look for a full contract the following year. So I'm guessing that he wants at least the first year guaranteed, which, you know, sounds like nothing, but not many guys coming out of Summer League, you know, get the first year fully guaranteed in a contract. So yeah, I don't think it would cost more than the league minimum, but that said, there's been some quality players who have, you know, been gotten for the league minimum, and I think we just, sure, why not give it to Seth Curry? But really, it should be, if you're a general manager, you should be looking at all the guys that you could possibly get with the with that same exact amount of money and then picking the best one out of those. I mean, who a guy like Jason Terry, would you rather have Seth Curry on this team next year or Jason Terry? Seth Curry's upside, so because I think we could agree that Jason Terry would probably be better next year, right? So is Seth Curry's upside so big that it would outweigh, let's say, Jason Terry?
You've picked someone I'm not a big fan of, so no, I wouldn't do that for Jason Terry. But I understand where you're going with it. There are players that have not been signed yet that are going to be gotten for the minimum contract, who I would be much better options than Seth Curry at the minimum. But if you look at the team, and there's a chance that Seth Curry might become a slightly better player, like there's still the potential for upside there. Would it absolutely shock you if next year Seth Curry he landed on some team, Pelicans or some other team, and we talk about him as a, you know, I don't know who's a good example, a Brian Roberts type player? So someone who can hit the three fairly well, can hit a mid-range jumper, doesn't necessarily have the speed or the strength to get all the way to the basket and is obviously a liability on defense. Like, you wouldn't be shocked if that ended up being him, would it?
Would not be shocked if he turned into a Brian Roberts type of player. Maybe slightly better.
And that kind of player is worth a little more than the veteran minimum. Obviously, like, that's what's happened in the market. Brian Roberts played fairly well for the Pelicans, and then he ends up in Charlotte for, you know, I think he made like $2.5 million a year. So you can look at him and say, okay, he's still 24. He might have a little bit more than what we've seen. He could turn into a decent backup point guard. Let's give him a little bit more money than the veteran minimum. And with Jason Terry, you're like, I know what I got. He might help us more next year. Might not, but at least I know that he's not going to make stupid mistakes because he knows what an NBA defense and offense looks like.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just – I mean, I'm just saying that there's you know, Ish Smith, Phil Presley, Luke Ridenour. Like, there's other guys that are out there that have played in the NBA, John Lucas III. Like, that's all I'm saying is that I just think that sometimes – people are too frivolous with, sure, just give him a contract, when really, yeah, he was on our team for summer league, but you can't look at it that way. You should just look at all the guys available and pick the one who might help your team the most. I personally would do it. I like him as a fifth guard option. I do think he has the skill set that I would look for in my fifth guard, especially, you know, playing up tempo. I think he's a guy that on one of those nights in the middle of January where your whole team is just not playing well, maybe you throw him in and he gets a spark going that helps you out. Like, I mean, you say Brian Roberts, I've said Brian Roberts, Gennaro Pargo's another one that comes to mind, but maybe, you know, in my mind, I think he has a little better range. So I would give it to him, but there's no way I would let Norris Cole walk and hand over my fourth guard spot to either Curry or Drew. I don't see, you know, they haven't proven that to me yet. And if I could bring Cole back for $3 million, why not?
All right. So let's shift this a little bit since we spent so much time talking about Mr. Curry. Let's say the Pelicans do bring back Cole and they fill that fifth spot with Curry, Drew, some other D-League guy who, you know, made them all hot and bothered, whatever. We now have five guards. So the team, since our last podcast, did fortify its forward position a little bit by signing G and extending Babbitt. And we'll talk about those two a little bit and, you know, when we're done with this discussion. But I wanted to get from you, like, we basically now have 13 guys under contract. Most of the time, the team will probably run with like 14 guys. A lot of teams like to have that 15th roster spot open so they can shuttle people in and out of it, have 10-day contract guys, or even, you know, be ready without waiving anybody for a trade or two. So I don't know if we'll actually get to 15. We'll probably sit at 14. What type of guy you looking for in that 14th spot on our roster? Like, Do you feel like there's a glaring need somewhere on our roster to fill in for depth?
I mean, Dell did say that he expects, you know, the top 11, 12 guys to be in the rotation. I don't know if it necessarily means every game, or, you know, maybe something like, well, Alonzo Gee is a better fit against this team this night, and Babbitt's better against this team this night, so they're kind of sharing in a 10th or 11th spot, you know. I don't expect whoever the final big on this roster is to be a guaranteed rotation guy, but I do think it's, you know, it's the one thing that we are lacking to me is some kind of veteran leader, tough guy, you know, kind of junkyard, barking dog type of presence, both in the locker room and on the bench or whatever. And I don't really care about the guy's skill set as much as what he could bring to the locker room or just in terms of tough. Like, for me, that fifth big, I would be happy with Chuck Hayes, Reggie Evans, of course, or even somebody like Kendrick Perkins. I don't see the guy as somebody who's going to play, so really I do not care. Give me somebody who, ask around NBA circles, find out who's good in the locker room, who could help mentor, and then bring that guy in. I really don't care what his skill set is.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, and I mean, Amin Alhassan, when he was on our podcast, did talk about how Alvin Gentry knows practically every single person who ever's picked up a basketball and glanced at the NBA. So I'm sure he can come up with some good suggestions of the guy to come in and be that sort of role.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some guys with some minor upside, like Greg Smith or even Henry Sims. Like, they're 24, 25 years old. Our whole roster is full of 25-year-old guys, it seems like. And, yeah, I know people want to bring in the guy with upside, and maybe he could be this, maybe he could be that. I hope whoever we sign next never plays again. So I just want intangibles at that level. So, like, yeah, give me somebody like Chuck Hayes. You know, so that's really all I want.
Someone like John Salmons?
But who never, ever played. I mean, when we signed John Salmons, he was basically going to be our starting small forward at that point, which was just scary. At least now we have the luxury of whoever the next guy we sign never has to play. So, yeah, go out and get me the best in the locker room guy. You know, somebody who, if somebody knocks down AD, will come off the bench and give the other team a hard foul in the next minute, or would it give me an enforcer. That's really all I care about. I don't want another upside guy who's 24 or 25, because he's not going to get the royal jelly anyway.
So, you know, you said Kendrick Perkins, and I got to say, now that Monty Williams isn't coaching the team, I'm 100% behind that suggestion. Like, I'm willing to believe that if Monty Williams is coaching this team and they brought in Kendrick Perkins, like, he would be one of those guys that Monty is just like, this guy's a veteran. He's a great presence. He's everything this team should aspire to be. And I'm going to give him his 15 minutes a game no matter what, no matter how bad he is. But with Alvin Gentry's be like, can he pick and roll? No, doesn't play. And we'll be happy.
Yeah. And I like your Monty voice. Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head. I mean, yeah, anybody like that, Nazir Muhammad, like, I don't care. I'm not looking for him to play. So, of course, you know, JaVale McGee has the upside and
could
get people excited, but I couldn't care less. I want the next guy to not play a single minute. So go ahead and get me whatever vet is going to help me in the locker room.
Yeah. Okay, so we touched on really briefly. Alonzo G, is he the missing piece?
It's really interesting to me. I mean, the last three signings have been three combo forwards, all that do something, you know, a lot of things differently. Like, you wish you could meld them together. You would have a pretty good combo forward if you could put Cunningham, Gee, and Babbitt together. They all have a couple of interesting skills. But I, you know, for me, Guy, I wrote a piece on the site this week about how, you know, if you're really looking for where to take advantage of the market, everybody's looking for shooters. And, you know, Anthony Davis has shown that he could get guys open shots. And, you know, Guy is a guy who's been able to knock down open shots. He's pretty much taken most of his threes from the corner the last couple of years. You look at Norris Cole and Quincy Pondexter before they came to New Orleans and how their three-point shooting percentages just skyrocketed afterwards. I mean, he's a guy that I think could be put in a situation and not asked to do too much. And he could have a couple of games where he hits a few threes. He's going to give you some athleticism on the wing and play some defense. I think that there's nights where he could give you 10 to 12 minutes, and he's somebody that I'm not terrified if Quincy Pondexter goes down and now he has to play a bigger role. I think that they've basically, you know, they filled out the small forward position with four or five guys who could play, you know, at a decent level. And that doesn't sound great, but when you look at where this team was last year, I mean, you look at 7 through 12 at the beginning of last season and 7 through 12 at the beginning of this season, and to me it's night and day. There's not anybody in that top 12 who I'm terrified of what's going to happen if they get on the court, you know, and you couldn't say that last year.
Oh, I was perfectly fine with Austin Rivers and John Salmons last year. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, and I mean, when we had one injury, Luke Babbitt had to start. Now, if you get one injury,
God, can you actually remember? Like, he started, was it like 15 games for us last year? I mean, it was not an insignificant number.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and I mean, before Eric Gordon got injured, he was terrible. I mean, we did you write it or somebody on our site wrote the article? I guess it was probably Mason. About how going from Gordon to Babbitt was an upgrade. Gordon was playing that terrible.
He was. He was shooting like 18% from three.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing is that I just now this year Gordon gets hurt. Tyreek moves into the starting lineup. We're still fine with Pondexter on the wing. Then even if Pondexter gets hurt, you know, I'm fine with Guy or Cunningham, and then you got the other guy playing backup minute. Like, I'm so much happier with 7 through 12 right now. And, you know, even a guy like Curry that we talked about at 13, I think the depth of this roster has really improved. And with Gentry playing guys less minutes and with us running a more up-tempo scheme, so we're going to have to use more of our rotation. You know, I know that these weren't exciting signings, but I think that it was interesting to see what Dell did getting a couple of combo forwards. And I'm curious to see how Gentry uses them, because if he could get guys open shots, I mean, we have guys who knocked down open threes at a ridiculous rate last year. Somebody like Babbitt, if you get Babbitt open looks, he'll take the open ones because, you know, his hitch won't matter as much. And, I mean, he's knocked them down at a high rate. So I like the depth. It's nothing to get excited about, but it's much better than what we had going into last year.
Okay. So what should we expect from Alonzo G this year? Probably 10, 15 minutes a game? Was that you see him backing up Pondexter? Or do you see him as more of a just – when injuries hit, he'll slide into that backup role. What are you thinking we'll see from him this season?
Yeah, I think him and Babbitt are sharing an 11th man role. I think on most nights, unless it's a blowout, we'll probably only play 10, and neither of those guys will play. But depending on different matchups or what we need, you know, I think either of those guys could slide into the 11th man role. I think Cunningham is still ahead of both of them. I think what it keeps seeming like it's setting up for more the Babbitt signing than Guy, but you've got Babbitt and Cunningham, and I still think that both of those guys' best positions on this team are power forward. I mean, it just, it feels like a Ryan Anderson trade is so imminent. And if not, then you're not really utilizing two guys to the best of the ability. I mean, I think that Cunningham and Babbitt could combine to give you a large portion of what Ryan Anderson can. I guess to me, maybe Dell just keeps signing guys and just keeps racking up, you know, players he's comfortable with no long-term idea of how it's going to play out. But it just, it seems like if Dell is setting up moves for down the road, like the easiest guy to move is Ryan Anderson, because you could just slide Cunningham and Babbitt into the backup four. And I don't really know how much of a beat, you know, you miss.
It just depends on if it's fully healthy Ryan Anderson or not.
Well, I mean, but it would be offset by whatever you get for Ryan Anderson, you know?
That's true.
Like, if you get a really good small forward, let's say, and then you move those guys over to power forward, like, that small forward combined with those two guys at power forward offset Ryan. So, I don't know. It just, it's, plus he's an expiring. You're already paying big money to a bunch of frontline guys. Like, it's so hard for me to imagine Ryan Anderson being here next year. So if that's the case, doesn't it, and you have all these guys who could slide right into his position, just it just seems like a matter of time. But what do I know?
Okay, so let us I real quick, we didn't mention it, Babbitt got 2 years, $2.5 million. Overpay, underpay, what do you feel about that deal?
Yeah, and I mean, I know the full details haven't come out, but I've heard that the second year is only partially guaranteed or not guaranteed or some kind of team option. I don't know, but I think it's a vast underpay, again, if he has a role. If, you know, he's just a bench guy who's – actually, I think it's an underpay either way. If all he is insurance against another Ryan Anderson injury, I think that's very cheap to pay for insurance. So I think it's an underpay – either way, I was happy with it.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I mean, his veteran minimum was about $200,000 under that. So, yeah, it's reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, he could knock down. I mean, he was one of the best three-point shooters in the league last year. I mean, he
and he took a lot of them. It's not like he hit them in, like he took 20 three-pointers and happened to hit half of them. So people are like, wow, he's a great shooter. Like, he took 100 of them, or so, right around there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I mean, again, I'm happy with the depth. I just, it feels like if you could just move Ryan Anderson for a quality small forward, like all the pieces would be in place. It just feels like they're not fully in place right now. You move him out and a small forward in, and all of a sudden, it just seems like your rotation is crystal clear. You got Pondexter as your backup small forward, you know, and then you've got Babbitt and Cunningham backing up the power forward. Like, it would just all fall into place. But who knows? Maybe Guy has a better season than we're thinking.
Yep. Okay. So next on my list of things to talk about is just general NBA knowledge, so that everybody here who can act like they know lots about the other teams in the Western Conference, although I'm sure plenty of you probably know more about some of these teams than I do. The Western Conference teams, I wanted to rattle through them and just have you say up, down for each one, like what, just knee-jerk, immediate reaction for these teams, and how you feel about their offseason, if they got to be a better team or a worse team. And I'll go in order of their record from this last season. So Golden State Warriors.
I mean, I would say slightly worse, not from a roster point of view, but of course they're losing Gentry. I'm also a little worried about Draymond Green with money and fame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, yeah, he's just having fun or whatever. But to me, like, I've seen those guys before, and you see the Kenneth Fareeds, and Kenneth Fareed still goes hard. But Kenneth Faried will never, in my opinion, play as hard as he did on that rookie contract. And I don't know. I don't know if Draymond Green keeps getting better. Klay Thompson, again, I still think it was Gentry's system that made him better than he actually was. I think you saw part of who he really was in the NBA Finals when Cleveland kind of locked in and Golden State didn't get the open shot. So I think that they'll be slightly worse than last year, but that's not really saying much considering they were one of the best teams of all time last year.
All right. Well, and I will add this piece about Draymond Green. Part of the reason why he went so late in the draft is he was old. The dude, it feels like, oh, he's a brand new up-and-coming young star, and he's probably got all kinds of room to grow. He's age 25 already. Like, he is – I'm not saying that's old and that there's no room for upside at all anymore, but you're not going to see any big leaps and bounds from where he was last year.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the player he is, and he might add a slightly more refined three-point shot or learn to pass a little better, although he's already pretty good at that. But you're not going to suddenly see next year he's going to come in and average 18 and 10. Just that's not going to happen.
No, I agree. All right, who's next?
Next is the Houston Rockets. And I actually made this mistake in an earlier podcast, and I felt terrible about it. I made a joke about how the Los Angeles Clippers, as soon as Chris Paul reached the second seed, his team falls apart. And obviously I didn't know what the hell I was talking about because his team didn't fall apart because he never made the second seed. So we got to wait for him to do that first. Because they were the third seed this year. They had the same record, but were third seed behind the Rockets. And it still seems wrong that the Rockets were a two seed. Like, that team strikes no fear into me whatsoever. I've never been afraid of the Rockets. I always feel like the Rockets are a beatable team. So, Rockets, did they get better this year or worse this year?
Yeah, I mean, they just traded for Ty Lawson a couple of hours ago. Mm-hmm. I think on paper, you would say that they've improved talent. They got a couple of players that I had my eye on. You know, Montrezl Harrell was a guy I liked in the draft, Marcus Thornton. So they made a couple low under the radar moves, brought back KJ McDaniels, but of course they finally made their big splash. I think Lawson the name is a little better than Lawson the player, and then especially with these problems, I'm not too excited one way or the other, but I've got to think that Dwight Howard plays more games for them this year. I don't know. It's a weird thing to say. I think they might be a better team but have a slightly worse record, or at least a lower seed. But I think maybe, you know, come playoff time, they might be slightly more dangerous, and this might be a year where they could actually, you know, win the West if they get the right matchups.
Yeah. As far as point differential went last year, they were only the fifth best in the Western Conference. They only outscored teams by three over the course of the season. That's a little unrealistic, too, because, like you said, Dwight Howard missed a lot of games for them, so it doesn't mean as much as, you know. But anyways, the Rockets, I feel like, on paper, I feel like Daryl Morey always nails the little moves. He always picks out the guys who, for some reason, are overlooked. Like, people always overlook Terrence Jones. Like, he's an actually good basketball player, but everyone always talks about Terrence Jones like he's a terrible power forward who shouldn't be starting on any team. Like, and he just keeps picking up guys like that and Corey Brewer and you know, probably, even though I'm not a fan of his, Sam Decker is going to be the same sort of guy. And he just nails all his little moves, but he ends up getting like the superstars that are superstars on paper but feel a little fragile. Like, there's something about their mental makeup that until they prove it to me, they're not gonna like be able to carry the team the way they need to. And like, is there any bigger like example of that than Ty Lawson is a superstar when you look at his advanced stats over the last few years? Like, he is a monster, but he just got cited for a second DUI in 6 months. Like, there's some serious problems with the dude here. So. I don't know.
Yeah.
I agree. I think I think they're going to be a little bit worse than they were last year, actually, but not much.
They're one of those if teams. Like, if everything goes right, they could be the best. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see them representing the West. I wouldn't be surprised to see everything just combust. Dwight Howard leaving next year. Like, there really is nothing that would surprise me with that team.
Yeah. All right, next team on the list, the Los Angeles Clippers, who since our last podcast has completely changed course. They got their boy DJ back. So, Los Angeles Clippers, better or worse than last year?
I think they start off better and finish worse. It feels like one of those teams that's going to just start off red hot. They'll kind of all bond behind the hate that DeAndre Jordan gets. Lance Stephenson will start off on his best behavior. Paul Pierce will have a summer to rest his tired bones, et cetera, et cetera. They'll start off really good. They'll be the this is the year for Chris Paul team of the NBA, whatever. And then they'll fade and they'll be either first round or a pretty easy second round exit.
Well, you think they're – wow. I don't know if I would go that far. I think they're going to be a better team than they were last year. And, you know, I expect to see them in the Western Conference Finals.
So you think they're one of the top two? So you think either San Antonio or Golden State are going home and the Clippers will take their place?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I do.
What do you like most about their team now?
I just like the fact that they actually have some depth. Like, that's been the Achilles heel for the Clippers for the last, 3 years? Is they have two, and then once DeAndre Jordan became a pretty good player, three really, really productive, excellent players on their team. And then they were papering over with one-dimensional guys like Jamal Crawford, who, if he's on, he's great, but if he's not, he's awful for you. And, you know, J.J. Redick's probably the best one that you could, like, if you can say the best fourth player for that team these last few years is either Jamal Crawford or J.J. Redick, that's pretty sad. And now you have Paul Pierce, and you have Lance Stephenson, and you have Josh Smith, and you have, you know, then behind them are J.J. Redick and Jamal Crawford. And they have guys like Wesley Johnson, who, while he's not a great player, he can at least come in and knock down some shots for you. Like, you're not relying on Hedo Turkoglu at age 36 to come in and do anything for you at this point. They have Ekpe Udo, who's actually not a bad backup big man at times. Like, they have some players here that can make that team not have to rely on all three of their stars giving everything all game long for them to have a prayer.
Yeah, see, I completely disagree. I think they added the wrong type of depth. Like, yep. You could go out and get Paul Pierce, or you could get Quincy Pondexter. And Paul Pierce is a much better player, is a better player than Quincy Pondexter. But think of all the guys you just named on their second unit. They are all guys who want the ball. Austin Rivers, Lance Stephenson, Paul Pierce, Josh Smith. Like, which one of those guys is going to sacrifice and say, "Oh, I don't want the ball. I'll do all the little things." They got no all the little things guys. They got guys who are good names and on a piece of paper look like good depth, but who is the Dante Cunningham? Who's the scrappy, I'm going to hustle back on defense and block a shot in transition. I'm going to dive on the floor. Like, yes, I agree. They got depth for NBA 2K. In real life, when you only have one ball on a second unit and you got Austin Rivers dribbling it for 6 hours and Paul Pierce calling for it and Lance Stephenson with his arm up, like, to me, that is the wrong type of depth. One of those guys would have been fine, but they basically got like five or six of them. I think they got the wrong type of depth, and it's going to blow up eventually.
Okay. I mean, I can't disagree that that's not a possibility. And I will say that I think they made one fairly major mistake in trading Barnes for Stevenson.
Yeah, like, he's like the type of guy, he'll only shoot the corner three and he'll do the dirty things. That's the type of depth you want, and that's the one they gave away for just more versions of Jamal Crawford. They just got a bunch of Jamal Crawfords across the board now.
Yeah, in some respects. I think Josh Smith is better than that. And so, anyways, let's keep it shorter than that. All right, Memphis Grizzlies.
Down.
You're always down on the Memphis
this
Grizzlies.
This will be the year I'm right.
I guess you could just keep saying it every year until it happens, because that worked with the Spurs.
It'll be the year. It's got to. It's got to happen eventually.
Really?
They put up the wins, but they're so – we saw it the one year where Marc Gasol got injured. They weren't even a playoff team. They were well below 500. They're, like, always teetering on this edge. If Gasol goes down – I think Randolph's overrated, honestly, as far as the impact he has. I think he's a fun guy and a good reclamation story, but I don't think he's that important. But, like, they're always teetering on this edge. Like, what was even their point differential last year? It wasn't indicative of their record, was it?
It's 3.2.
Yeah, I mean.
So, yeah, it's a little better. I mean, a little worse than their record should be. Yeah.
Yeah, Gasol goes down, and all of a sudden, like, if Gasol misses the entire year, how many wins do they have?
Oh, I think they'd still be around 41 or 42. Oh,
no chance. No way. They would be a 30-35 win team.
Wow.
I mean, that's what they were when he went out, what was it, 2 years ago, and then he came back and they won at a 50-something win pace. They're just teetering on the edge. They're another Mike Conley injury or Gasol injury.
But they have Matt Barnes now.
Yeah, right.
And I do know where this hate is coming from. Don't think I don't know. I know the reason why you're talking all the smack about the Memphis Grizzlies.
No idea.
Your boy Nick Calathes not being, like, letting him go overseas. Yeah, I'm sure that really pissed you off.
I disrespected him. No, I think that they're a good team. It's just like you're teetering on the edge and, you know, you're the guy in the yard that's just barely winning all the fights. Meanwhile, everybody else in the yard is getting a little stronger, and you're getting a little slower. Like, eventually, you're just going to start getting pummeled. Like, they're not dominating teams. You know, they're just squeaking by, and eventually, that's just going to go by the wayside. And to me, this is the – I still think they're seventh in the West. I'm not saying they're terrible, but New Orleans will finish ahead of them this year. They will be – there's a top seven in the West that is clear as day. Memphis will be the seventh of those teams.
All right. Let's move on.
What are they finishing in your eyes? What seed is Memphis at the end of the year?
Oh, I think they're five or six.
Yeah, I think if they're five, I would be shocked.
Yeah, but, okay, anyways, we'll keep going. San Antonio Spurs, who, by the way, finished with the exact same record as the Memphis Grizzlies. Yet they were somehow the sixth seed in the Western Conference. The San Antonio Spurs, they made some splashes that you didn't seem to think were all that fantastic. What do you think about the Spurs?
They will not be as good this year as they were at the end of last year or obviously the year before. I know on paper they have a better roster, but they will not touch. The Spurs at the end of the regular season last year, I mean, before they got in play us, but in the, like, 15 games before that, were unbelievable. And obviously the Spurs that dismantled the Heat in the finals were on – they will never touch that version of themselves this year. I don't care with Aldridge, whatever. So they'll finish with a higher seed, I think. I think they'll obviously go further in the playoffs, but – I don't think we will ever see a Spurs team again as good as the one we saw in the 2014 finals or even at the end of last year.
Yeah, I want to say that I'll disagree with you and feel like they're pretty similar, but I do have like one massive red flag about this team, which I just can't get away from. And it falls along the lines of, hey, this is the modern NBA where you have to have effective ball handling guards. You have to have those guys who could penetrate and kick and move the ball around. And this team has been fantastic for years because it could rely on Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili to really just to start cracking defenses left and right. And if they weren't working, they usually had a couple other guards off the bench who could come in and do something. Tony Parker had an awful, awful year last year. He's 33. He is extremely dependent on his speed to get to where he needs to go. Those guys go fast. When they start to fade, they just crash and burn. Like, you can go through history and just see, like, a series of point guards who hit age 31, 32, and they're out of the league in 2 years because they're not good at basketball if they don't have their speed. So Parker might be at that phase where he's just done. Manu, we know, is pretty close to it, and he knows that he's coming back for only a couple million this year. And Patty Mills isn't going to be able to pick up that slack. Like, Patty Mills is a fine player. He's not doing it. And Kawhi Leonard is not a ball handler. Like, he's a jack of all trades, very high level at a lot of things, but he's not a primary attack dude. So I'm actually along the same lines as you. I think they're actually going to be a worse team, though they're definitely not going to be a six seed because LaMarcus Aldridge is going to let them be able to rest some of their guys and still get high level scoring out of them.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, what I'm looking forward to is when the Spurs are like 9-8 and we get like what we had with the Heat a couple years ago of the panic meter and what's wrong with the Spurs? Like, I can't wait for the media to get all excited about that and start wondering what happened to this team that they all picked to win another title.
Yeah, or when Cleveland was 21-21.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's what I don't get is, like, I see a lot of our fans buying into the continuity. I buy into it. But then the second another team makes another move for a player, oh, that team just got better. You can't have it both ways. You can't say that, you know, Houston's going to be able to give all these minutes and the ball handling to Ty Lawson and get better, and then also say that continuity is, like, I don't know. I mean, one works more than the other. To me, I think that a lot of the teams that made changes are going to struggle, you know, and I kind of have to believe that if I believe in the continuity thing, which I do, and not just for our team, but I would believe in that for any team in a similar situation. So I think a lot of those teams are going to struggle early. I think it's imperative that the Pelicans get out to a really fast start, because I think that's going to be their advantage early on. Before we move on to the next one, let me just ask you, of these teams that you've rattled off so far, give me the one, because how they're going to do over 82 games is different than how they might do against the Pelicans. I know we have a long way to go before we get there, but who would be the one that you would most want to see in a playoff series and least want to see of the ones you've named so far?
The team I most want to see, and this is just more on our recent history with them, is the Memphis Grizzlies. Just because they just seem to fail utterly in scoring against our team. The one I would least want to see, Golden State Warriors is the obvious answer for me. Like, I'm sorry, like, I want to say the Spurs because our team still makes defensive mistakes and they're going to execute you into oblivion, but Golden State's still, like, a fantastic team. Like, if you're worrying about anyone, Golden State's still a fantastic team to be scared about. So Golden State.
Yeah.
They just need to avoid them. Like, I'm sorry, they're just too good defensively. And while we have the best player on the court when we're up against them, and that's going to be the case in most of these situations, it's still, like, You can't win when you have the best player and then they have the next five.
I mean, am I crazy to think that we pretty much had our way at times with San Antonio last year, plus they added a player that I love how we match up against in Aldridge?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would really like – I don't know. Part of me would really like to play – San Antonio, I mean, they were clicking on all cylinders last year, and just with younger team and younger legs, we just utterly beat their butts at home, and then I think they've gotten worse defensively, and again, I'm going to love if they go to Aldridge in isolation against AD, so
yeah.
Part of me would really like to just lay the smackdown on them in the first round of the playoffs. That would be awesome.
Well, I know you already have the narrative in your mind where it's going to end up at the end of the season, the top three teams are going to be Golden State, the Los Angeles Clippers, and the Oklahoma City Thunder in the West. And right there at 4-5 is San Antonio and the Pelicans, and the Pelicans are going to rise to glory on the ashes of the previous champions of the Western Conference with the Spurs, like setting them to rest, rising like a phoenix to challenge the Warriors and take the crown.
And then Durant peeks over and says, wow, that was impressive, and comes and joins that summer. Yeah. I think the only other team we have to talk about is Oklahoma City, unless you think differently. Do you think that there's anybody else? I think there's a clear top seven. Do you think that there's anybody else in the West? I guess let me say this. Somebody from outside of that top seven somehow makes the playoffs and is a top seven seed. Who would your pick be for that team?
Oh, wow.
I think every team that has that opportunity would have to make a move to get there. Like, I don't think any of these teams as constructed can. And our top seven, of course, is Golden State Warriors, Houston Rockets, Los Angeles Clippers, Memphis Grizzlies, San Antonio Spurs, Oklahoma City Thunder, and you want the Pelicans in there as well, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So then the other teams that we have to choose from are the Trailblazers, Mavericks, Suns, Jazz, Nuggets, Kings, Lakers, Timberwolves. So one of those teams would have to come in and be better than the seven I've listed. Like, it's possible that the Suns or the Jazz, in my opinion, could do that. It's possible, but they'd have to get another player.
You don't think there's any way with continuity and the Jazz being so great in the second half of the last year that could just continue? And
no, I think the Jazz are – if I had to pick right now who my eighth seed in the Western Conference is, Jazz are the eighth seed. I think they are. I think they have to make the leap that we did last year to be able to prove – like to be able to make those steps. Like that step from – almost being in the playoffs to actually making the playoffs is not the easiest thing in the world. And they've got a lot of young guys and they still got a lot of questions. Like, who is their point guard? It's Gordon Hayward right now, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, it's not Trey Burke. He's not quality. And Exum showed me nothing last year. Maybe he will be, but you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyways, does it annoy you that Trey Burke got a invite to the US training camp? Like, how does that guy rate an invite?
He hit a big shot in college. I don't know. I've never gotten anything about Trey Burke's game, so I'm the wrong person to ask. Yeah, I think the Jazz are going to do similar to what Phoenix did last year. Of they're going to be everybody's darling and the one who, look at them last year, and now, you know, with another year of growth, they'll get better. I just think the league will start taking them seriously. I think that they had a nice little run, you know, at the end of last year, and I don't see it as sustainable. I'd still give Dallas the nod as that eight seed.
I'm so down on Dallas right now.
Yeah, to me, it's just Carla. But then again, I mean, Parsons could be out till Christmas or later. Wesley Matthews coming. I mean, from an on-paper standpoint, it makes no sense to believe in Dallas. Like I've said before, if they didn't have Carlisle, to me, they would be a lotto team without, you know, a doubt. What about, is there any chance that Portland becomes a Western version of the Bulls? Damian Lillard has a Derrick Rose-type MVP season, and everybody else just plays their role, works hard, does all the little things, lets Lillard take 25, 30 shots a game, and somehow they are the surprise team in the West. Any chance that happens? Good home court advantage.
10%. I'll give him a 10%. And that's more along the line. Like, I have a real hard time being convinced of where points are going to come from other than Lillard. Like, is Myers Leonard going to score? Is Noah Vonleh going to score?
Aminu, 18 points a game?
Oh, come on. I could actually buy into this being a quick athletic team that can maybe give you troubled defensively. They were actually a pretty good defensive team last year, so we know that they're capable of putting together a type of system that can could be pretty good defensively.
Yeah, but they lost Alonzo Gee.
They did lose Alonzo Gee. So I could see that happening. It's just their offense, I cannot figure out where the points are going to come from. Unless C.J. McCollum turns into, like, the second coming of...
And he looked good in the playoff. I mean, that's what it could be. It could be those two guys averaging 45...
Is he next Klay Thompson?
Those two averaging 45 a game, and then the bigs just doing all the hard work and getting the offensive rebound. That's what I'm saying, like a Western Conference Bulls team back when it was just Rose and a bunch of other guys, but yeah, at least they had Boozer. But yeah, I'm obviously reaching. We know Denver won't be that team. We know the Lakers and Minnesota won't be that team.
You're killing Denver already? You don't think that's like a championship roster they put together there?
No. And I do love Moutier, but we know we could pretty much rule those three out. Sacramento, I guess, could be the ultimate wild. When you have a team that has...
What would you do if Sacramento was the 8th seed? Like,
I mean, it would be great. Like, it would be great. I tweeted the other day, like, what if Sacramento does really well, and then you know how the NBA is a copycat league, they become the franchise to model after. Like, and every franchise just fires 3 or 4 coaches, you know, has wars with social media, with their own player. Like, that would be fascinating.
They will be able to roll out a lineup with Stockton and McLemore.
What was that last name?
I was trying to come up with Malone, okay. But McLemore is too far from it to make it work.
Yeah.
If they had the same coach, they could have had Stockton and Malone. God, they should never have fired that guy.
Let me run one more thing by you.
Okay.
So the thinking is, I think that outside of the most optimistic fans, most of the Pelicans fans are going, all right, you know, the West is going to be disgusting this year. It's just brutal. This will be the year that the Pelicans take another step forward, 50-plus wins. Maybe they get to the second seed if they find the right matchup. And, you know, then in the summer you try to get a Durant or tweak your roster a little this way or that way. Sorry. Let me throw one other thing by you, and I'll start off with the premise. This is going to be really hard to do. Those of you listening, play at home. 2 years ago, so the year before this past year, 2013-2014, who was the second best player on the Golden State Warriors? And don't look, but I guess let me ask you this. Who had the second highest PER by a wide margin? So obviously Steph Curry was already a star. Who do you think was second?
And Iguodala wasn't with them then. He was still in Denver.
He was.
Oh, was he with them?
This year, yeah. It was his first year with the team.
Then I'm having a hard time deciding between Iguodala and David Lee. I'll go with Iguodala.
No, you should have went with your other guess. David Lee was far and away, not even close. And again, PR is not the only thing, but when you see how big the gap is. So Steph Curry had a 24 PR, David Lee had 19. What do you think Klay Thompson's was?
Oh, Klay Thompson's always been hated by PER until this year, and even now I think he's average. So I would probably say 13.
14.3. What do you think Iggy's was?
I would have, before you said that, I would have guessed Iggy's was 18 or 19.
13.7.
Wow, what happened?
On to Draymond Green. What do you think his was?
Green was nothing when he was early. 12?
Yeah, 12.7. So, I mean, my point is that I know it's impossible for people to forget what they saw last year. And I'm trying to ask people to do this, but... And it's just PER, but I could rattle off a bunch of other stats that shows that Klay Thompson wasn't that great, that Draymond Green wasn't that great. I mean, even Steve Kerr, coming into the season, admitted that he thought he was a bench guy, maybe 10 to 12 minutes a game, et cetera. So it's very hard to take ourselves back to that moment, but Ethan Sherwood Strauss had a terrific article when the Klay Thompson Kevin Love trades were being discussed about how Klay Thompson really just isn't that good of a player. He's not very versatile offensively. He does a lot of things that make, you know, Warriors fans put their face in their palm. I mean, he couldn't shoot off the dribble. He would try to all the time. He was a good defender who was a spot-up shooter. Draymond Green was a seventh man. You know, David Lee was probably their second-best offensive player. This was just a year ago. So I say all this with the idea of, is it possible? Is it possible that a year from now we are looking at this Pelicans roster entirely differently, and we're not even looking to change it at all because, like Klay Thompson, Tyreek Evans took off and is now an all-star level player. Like, you know, I don't know who else, like Iguodala, Drew Holiday took it to another level. I guess I'm just saying we're looking at a lot of flawed players or guys with like average PERs or slightly above average. That's exactly what Golden State was looking at a year ago. Is it impossible to envision the systems completely putting the guys in the right situations, and all of a sudden, a year from now, we look at this roster as just something that we have to maintain, not change?
So I'm going to, yes, but I'm going to say something a little differently than I don't think the offensive system is going to turn any of our guys into superstars. I don't think we're going to see a system that's going to be put in place that can suddenly make Tyreek Evans have like a 37-point quarter like Klay Thompson did, where people are now like, oh, that guy is amazing, whether we believe ourselves that Klay Thompson is a superstar now or not. I think that, however, this team could have improved so much and become so much more of a force in the Western Conference that people will just be saying, Alvin Gentry came in, put him in a system where they're really, really good, and now all these players are excellent players and they have very few flaws. But I will say that that'll be just because people don't understand defense. And you never, like, there are still people out there who will say that the Golden State Warriors won the championship because their offense was so amazing, and completely ignore the fact that they had the second best defense in the league last year, and they've been a really great defensive team. And that's what I think is going to happen with the Pelicans. If they are actually going to make the leap this year, it's going to be because Darren Erman came in and said, these are how we're doing the defense. They buy in, and they become a better than average defense, possibly, you know, like 9 or something like that, or 8. That's like my fondest dream, is to get in the top 10 defensively and keep their offense, which, you know, even if you just do that on the defensive end, you're generating points on the offensive end because you're going to have more chances to rebound, get out to run, and get shots. And I mean, if I was having, like, you know, my fondest, you know, kind of dream possible, we could, you know, say, oh, they'll be the Steve Nash Phoenix Suns and have the most amazing offense ever with Drew Holiday as Steve Nash and Anthony Davis as Uber Amari Stoudemire. And then defensively, they're also going to be like top 10, which is something the Suns could never even dream at doing. That would be an amazing thing to see. But I don't know. I have a feeling that the team could leap dramatically, and I have a feeling that 80% of that motor will be defensive.
Yeah, I could see part of that. I mean, this is the thing I saw you asked on Twitter, if people are getting too optimistic about the system, and specifically Gentry's system. I think it's a bunch of byproducts that I'm getting more excited about. Like, I know it's stupid and it's the off season, but Tyreek Evans losing 12 pounds and noticeably, I mean, they're noticeable pounds if you look at some of the videos or pictures he's put out. Eric Gordon losing 10 pounds. You know, those guys getting in the best shape of their lives because they're going to have to play in Gentry's system, which I think will only help with quickness on defense. Like, it's a lot of the ancillary things that get me more excited about the team, you know, Tyreek maybe even being excited to come off the bench instead of just willing. It's a lot of things like that that get me more excited than just, quote unquote, his system, the confidence and the risk taking that he's going to inspire in guys. I still think, and we just won an award for best sports blog in New Orleans. You know, we have to drop that in there.
That's right, we did.
I mean, and beat out Larry Holder and NOLA.com. Like, we beat out some, and it was criteria based and yada yada. So, a little bit proud of it, but for all my articles that I've wrote, I still think the one that I would hold up on our site over any else was Jason's piece on Monty Williams and risk aversion, and how, you know, all the critiques of Monty that people had and all the hot takes, I really think the one that I agree with the most and that I think was real was, you know, his desire to just be risk averse. And we saw that hurt the team more than anything else. You know, the favorite thing that Amin said to us was how he kind of pulled, who was it, Barbosa aside and said, don't play like Nash, play like yourself. It was Dragic. He said, just go out there and play your minutes, play your game. I'm not going to pull you if you make a mistake, whatever. You're getting this many minutes, go out there and play. And so it's little things like that more than a system that I think are going to have some big results. So for me, it's not as simple as the system, but I think all those things put together, I mean, I know I'm obviously eyeing Durant, but if that doesn't come to fruition, I don't know if we're not sitting here a year from now going, man, let's just bring back all our guys and then re-sign them again the year afterwards, because in this system, they're everything that Demps imagined when he got them in the first place.
We can hope. So here's my number one resistance to that idea. I still feel like all of our guards are perfectly average when you take into account everything that they do. They don't come out much better than a C rank for me, because while they can all do something amazing, they have other real negatives to them that kind of just make them fall down to like an average guard. And an average guard is going to win you, like, you know, five games in the NBA if they play enough minutes. But that you got to have at least one perimeter guy who's better than average. You got to find that guy. That's how I feel. So
yeah.
I have a hard time.
And I would have said this, and that's my point, is I would have said the same thing about Golden State's roster outside of Curry going into last year. You couldn't have convinced me. What do you think Harrison Barnes' PER was the year before?
Oh, isn't it still kind of crappy? But I would, I don't know, probably a 13.
A 9? Well, let me make sure I get this right. I thought I memorized it, but let me check real quick. I want to say it was a 9.8. I mean, like, it's so hard for people to remember who Golden State actually was. And people say, oh, they would have gotten better with Mark Jackson. They were young. I'm telling you, they wouldn't have. And we can never prove it. But Klay Thompson was static. Harrison Barnes was actually declining. Draymond Green, slight improvement, whatever. Like, they were put in the right situations. They had music blaring at practice. That was the difference maker, I'm telling you. but no, I'm just kidding on that one. But I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility that the same way we saw Golden State as one superstar, and then who's their second banana? They can't win a championship. They don't have that second piece. They have a bunch of meh players, but they're going to have to package them together and get a Kevin Love to get a real second piece next to Curry, and that probably won't even be enough. Like, take yourself back to a year ago, and I swear that was the narrative about Golden State last year. They got put into a system to better utilize the player. You still can't convince me that any of those guys got better skill set wise. I watched Klay Thompson. Yeah, he had that terrific quarter, but he was pretty much the same guy, and we saw it in the finals. So I don't know. That's just my thing, is that I at least want to look out for that as a possibility.
Okay. I do. because you actually sprang it on me. I do want to get your take, because every year there is, and this is the NBA, so this doesn't happen often, but there is always one team that in the league that makes a leap from where it is, like, a, you know, in the, usually it's a team that's around 30 wins, and they do make the leap into at least playoff contention. Whether they make the playoffs or not, it doesn't matter, but they're usually, like, right there on the bubble. Western Conference team, you've already kind of said you didn't think the Jazz are it, you don't think the Nuggets, like, what of those Western Conference teams, if you had to put money down right now, which team has, and you can't use the Dallas Mavericks, has a chance to grab the eighth seed in the Western Conference?
Sacramento Kings.
Sacramento?
You still go with the best player. And
okay.
I know you think he's a head case, and he is, probably, maybe he's getting better. I could still see a scenario in which the Kings on a nightly basis, I mean, the on-off splits with Cousins, just the times Cousins was on the court, they were a top 12 team, maybe even better. Like, they're a very good team when he was on the court last year, so they would be the one that, for all the dysfunction, you put Rudy Gay at the four and Cousins at the five, you figure all the rest out, but that's a pretty dangerous combo right there to start. So they would be my pick, but again, they could also blow up and win 17 games this year, so who knows?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, this is a lot of basketball talk. I want to get to something fun real quick. Maybe we come back to basketball to close it, but I want to give the people what they want a little bit, to borrow from another podcast. You and I have interacted a little bit more on Twitter lately. You seem to get on there. I could always tell when your lunch break is. Because, I'm right, aren't I?
It's usually lunch break, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. It's always like for a burst of like four or five tweets. Like, I imagine you like with half of a sandwich and and maybe an apple, and you're right out there tweeting. But every once in a while, somebody will tweet to both of us, and there'll be like a hip-hop reference in there.
Yeah.
And you just completely don't understand. But
that's very true. I have the Beastie Boys on my iTunes.
Okay, calm down. so that's kind of how you, I mean, that's the issue, is I interact with my followers a lot, you know, with hip-hop references. But then when you get in, you seem a little lost. So I wanted to play a little game with you.
Okay.
It's a hip-hop-based game. I don't know. Maybe the audience could come up with what to name it. But it's...
And I'm not allowed to use Google, I'm assuming.
No, shut all that off. I just want to go on gut instincts. So what's going to happen here is it's kind of going to be a spelling bee, but instead of, I'll give you the spelling, I want you to come up with the definition. Now, like the spelling bee, you'll also have ways to get some information. So you'll be able to ask for a region of origin, let's say, and I'll give you some information about where maybe this rap word or phrase started from, a rapper that used it. I'm sure that'll help you a lot.
Yeah. Right.
I'll also give you a spelling if you ask for it, and then I'll also give you a you know, maybe a phrase or a rap lyric that it was used in, maybe too, whatever. And so you could try right off the bat. You could ask for, again, a region of origin, use, you know, can I hear this in a sentence, and I'll give that to you. But when it's all said and done, or throughout the process, I want you to give me what you think this thing is. So are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So the first word is Skrilla. Skrilla. So go ahead. Any information you want? I could give.
Well, I would love to hear it in a phrase.
Okay. So the first one is doing dirt for the Skrilla, main. Doing dirt for the Skrilla, main. The spelling is Skrilla. It's derivative. It comes from the West Coast specifically. A lot of credit is given to the rapper E-40.
Yeah,
so again,
I'm familiar with E-40.
Yeah, you might also know him as Efeezy.
Okay, that helps.
So, again, doing dirt for the Skrilla main. So give me your first instinct. What do you think Skrilla is?
A gorilla that writes scrolls?
No. I'll give you one more sentence. Take it seriously.
Okay.
I'm feeling my Skrilla, but perhaps my Skrilla ain't feeling me.
That's got to be something about you're like your chick, right?
No, I'm sorry. Skrilla is paper or money. Oh. Doing dirt for that Skrilla, man. So, like, you're willing to do whatever for that money, for that paper.
I was thinking, like, you know, doing it for your lady.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, here's another one. This actually derives near and dear to my heart from New Orleans, from a rapper we know as Juvenile.
Okay.
Okay, so...
And I actually know that name, like, because I can't, like, get away from emails where you don't mention Juvenile at least a few times.
Yeah. So this one is Wody.
Okay. Spell it for me.
Now, this is the interesting part, is there's actually two spellings, and when you hear where it comes from, there actually could be a third, but Wody is commonly spelled W-O-D-I-E, or some in the vernacular spell it W-H-O-D-I, Wody. I tend to spell it W-O-D-I-E. But again, New Orleans, Juvenile, I'll give you a little bit of a hint. It's kind of derived from the wards in New Orleans, specifically the 7th Ward. So here it is. This comes from somebody I'm sure you're familiar with, B. Gizzle, on the Thugged Out track.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Call your Wodies. Let them know I'm a keep ya. Sorry, let me start this over. Call your Wodies. Let them know I'm a keep ya till they cough up 60 G's. Again, call your Wodies. Let them know I'm a keep ya till they cough up 60 G's.
So is this some sort of bastardized version of homies?
Nice. You got it right. Yes.
My initial inclination was that it had something to do with tattoos.
Mm.
Because they used to use woad back in the old ancient medieval times to give people tattoos. This is important stuff to know.
We're all learning something today.
You see, your example is too easy for me.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, okay.
See?
Let's see if you get this one.
Okay.
This is a ghetto bird.
Okay.
A ghetto bird.
Okay.
Now, this comes from the West Coast yet again, from a rapper you might be familiar with from some of his movies like Are We There Yet, called Ice Cube.
Okay, yeah, yeah. No Ice Cube.
So, Ghetto Bird. Now, this one, for those of you with kids in the car, maybe earmuffs, I'll try to keep this as PG-13 as possible. Here, so West Coast, Ice Cube, Ghetto Bird. Here is a lyric. The shit that I'm saying, make sure it's heard. Mother F you and your punk ass ghetto bird. Run, run, run from the ghetto bird. Run, run, run from the ghetto bird.
Well, I don't know. My initial inclination is if it's a rapper and he's running from someone, is it the cops?
You're close. Let me... Now, that was extremely racist, but...
It was. I don't know if I should be putting this on the podcast.
Okay. Here, let me...
Isn't Ice Cube the one who wants to kill all the cops?
Yes, he did.
Or is that Ice-T? It was one of those Ice guys, right? Vanilla Ice?
Vanilla Ice, it was. Let's see if you can get a little bit more specific with this lyric.
Oh, God.
And it involves somebody I know you're familiar with.
Okay.
All that night I heard the bird circle while I was eating fish and watching Urkel. She said I could sleep on the couch. By 2 a.m. I was digging her out. F-U-C-K, the ghetto bird. All that night I heard the bird circle while I was eating fish and watching Urkel. What does that tell you? Put yourself in Ice Cube's situation. What would the ghetto bird be? What would be circling? You were close with your first guess. It's just a little more specific.
I have no idea.
The police helicopter. It's a ghetto bird. It terrorizes people in the inner city.
I should have been able to guess that one.
Yeah, no, I thought...
I'm so traumatized from the previous conversation.
All right, we only got two more. Okay. This one is a very popular phrase now going around the kids are using. Started in the Midwest, Chicago. It is pronounced thought, or thought, sorry. Similar to, like, kind of like thought mixed with... Actually, imagine dot. But with a TH in front. So,
okay.
Thought.
What you used to think about.
THOT. THOT.
Okay.
And it's an acronym. Each letter stands for something. So, this I tried to mix it up with you. You try to tell me.
It's an acronym. I have to guess an acronym?
Yeah. So, THOT. So, here it is. Thoughts twerk for the good fellas. She money dance with the money team. Thoughts twerk for the good fellas. She money dance with the money team. This is Chance the Rapper.
I want to start off with Totally Hot.
Totally Hot? No.
Or Total Hot.
Surprisingly, rappers do not call things Totally Hot.
It's like a Valley Girl rapper. It's like Totally Hot.
Chance the Rapper thinks I'm totally hot.
I don't know.
Okay, so you got four letters. You could pick. We'll start. You'll get 3 points.
Give me the O. Give me the O.
Over. So now you have the ability to pick, to earn 3 points.
Over.
Yep. Ask for another letter, you're down to 2 points.
That doesn't help at all.
Want to hear the strategy.
Oh, God. I'm trying to think of just some acronym you could use for a stripper. I'm not coming up with it at all. Give me an H.
Ho. So you got T, ho, over T. And it's not, don't start guessing stuff with eggs. It's not over easy, or it's T ho over T.
I have no idea. Just give, let me know, what is it?
That ho over there.
Oh, it's God.
Just a quick way.
That's so easy. I was like trying to come up with something like, oh.
I mean, these aren't like nuclear physics. Like, they're not coming up with, you know. All right, so last one. This one I'm going to give you maybe a reference that you might deal with in your everyday life. So the phrase is, got the dragon. I figured this would be a good one to go off on because of our Game of Thrones talk. So got the dragon. There's nothing worse than when my boss barks a bunch of orders at me while he's got the dragon.
What?
There's nothing.
The first thing I think of when you say got the dragon is like a brother beating his sister.
Wait, what?
That's Game of Thrones. Like the original, don't wake the dragon. Like that's what Danny's brother used to say to her all the time. So I was off in like the complete wrong area here.
Okay.
All right, so boss.
Your boss comes up to you barking a bunch of orders, and he's got the dragon.
I don't know. Is that slang for a pit bull?
What kind of office do you work in, Michael Pitt?
That'd be pretty terrifying, wouldn't it?
Ryan, you might have the dragon when you wake up in the morning. I don't know you very well.
A hangover?
We've never met, but you might have the dragon when you wake up in the morning.
So I was straight for hangover. That tells you something about me, right?
All right, your final clue. You might not want to kiss your wife in the morning because she's got the dragon.
Bad breath?
There you go. See, you could use all this stuff at the office tomorrow. You could say, give me somebody's name in your office.
Does it matter if it's male or female?
Give me a male.
A male? Chad.
Hey, Chad. I don't know about you, but that ghetto bird was keeping me up all night. And check out the tot over there. She got the dragon. Now, I guess you double use it. Are you?
Yeah, you double used there.
I double used it, but then you finish with, "Are you feeling me, Wody? Because I'm just here trying to make that Skrilla." Can you say that tomorrow at work?
I will try absolutely to say that tomorrow at work.
Us
when nobody is listening.
And then tweet it to all of us on your lunch break.
Right.
Well, I feel like we've educated the audience. Do you want to try to top that, or should we just go up?
No, I think that's the end of the podcast right there.
All right.
So thanks, everybody, for listening to me embarrass myself on In the Know. And hopefully don't talk to people when you've got the dragon.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.